Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Fairbanks City Council regular work session this Tuesday, June 6, 2023. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Yep. Mr. Cleworth?
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Here.
Mr. Rainsdad? Mr. Marnie?
I'm here.
Ms. Tidwell? Doesn't look like she's online yet. Ms. Rogers?
Here.
And Mayor Pruse?
Here. Before we go into the rest of the agenda, I want to thank the City Council for weighing with me the last City Council meeting. I wasn't feeling my best, but I'm back. I'm happy, and I thank you for making it through with me. So, anyway. Item number two on our agenda is resolution number 5067, a resolution establishing a rate of levy for the 2023 real estate property taxes in the city of Fairbanks. And Margarita, would you like to start us off with that?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Good morning, everyone. The first thing I wanted to let you know that this is a revised resolution from what you received in your packet on Friday. And we are proposing a mill levy of 6.218 mills. This is an increase of 0.464 mills, which would be equivalent to $46.40 per $100,000 assessed value. If you'll turn with me with your attachment, you'll see that the last year, the tax cap subtotal, you'll see it was 20,754. You'll see that the allowable additions, which would be your tax cap subtotal above times the CPI, which was 8.1%, you'll see that value. We're also adding in the new construction, which is time the prior year mill rate. You'll see 310,000 there, 561. The voter approved services, which is a static amount, and that's 695,000, 380. And then your claims and judgments of 1,927,934 for a tax cap total of 25,310,634. And that is a slight increase, of course, you can see from last year. Budget taxation, this is where I've made some changes. Your alcohol beverage is 2.5 million, tobacco at 1.1, gasoline at 500,000, and room rental, which is at the 1999 level of 2.2, even though we budgeted for 4.2. So we're taking the tax cap amount of 25,310,634 minus that budget taxation. You have a property tax limit, which is your cap of 18,977,326.
Any questions for Margarita? Ms. Sprinkle?
Margarita, you said that you changed something in the budget taxation. What was it that you changed?
Okay, I increased alcohol beverage from 2.3 to 2.5, from tobacco from 900,000 to 1.1.
Mr. Clayworth.
Thank you, Mayor. Margarita, under claims and judgments, what was that number the prior year?
Prior year, that number increased by 50,000. 367 last year was at 1.87 million.
1.87?
Mm-hmm.
What's driving that? Still the water problem?
The biggest increase is the general liability. You had quite a few cases last year, and you still have a few this year, you'll see, that will increase that number.
Cases against the city, you mean?
Yes, cases against the city.
Okay.
Ms. Tidwell, sorry, I apologize, yeah. Mr. Cleworth.
I mean, the number is a bit of a shock. It'll be interesting to see what the community has to say about this, but Normally, we struggle to get about $400,000 or $500,000 of new revenue each year, and this is using an 8.1%. Is a chunk.
So that comes from the Anchorage CPI index.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I don't know, it's just something I got to think about. But
well, always remember, we put together a budget, and city council controls the budget, and you can adjust the income and taxes accordingly as you think. So we'll see this again.
Can we have the computation sheet in the packet when we get the packet, the formula sheet?
Yes, it should be in your packet. Are you referring to the second page that you have before you?
No, the actual formula that you run, the one-page formula showing prior year or this year, side-by-side columns.
Oh, yes, I can give you that. That shows the side-by-side.
Yeah.
I know which one you're referring to.
I appreciate seeing that one. Thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Maybe that's what I was going to ask about, is last year's CPI was, what, 4-something?
It was 4.9%.
That is a jump. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Marnie, do you have anything?
No, I'm just listening intently.
Ms. Didwell, do you have anything? Good morning, Ms. Didwell. You're on mute still. Okay, we'll come back. Any other questions on item number one? Mr. Ringstad.
Us that are new to this budget exercise here, or at least to the income side of this thing, I'm interested in the side-by-side that Jerry was talking about. So tax cap, this is our estimate of revenues, right? As
yes.
Opposed to comparing that to what we're actually talking about spending. I mean, I'm concerned about a half a mil increase. Just because we can doesn't mean we have to.
You're exactly right.
In this claims, are most of these claims, are these judgments we have to pay? And they're one-time expenses?
It varies. These are claims that you have paid. Some are associated with lawsuits. Some of them are associated with your insurance, falls under the risk and claims.
Oh.
So it's a variety of items that are associated with claims and judgments. And some you're working on the PFAS, that would fall under it. But the majority of your adjustments were due to.
So things like PFAS, we're working on that. So is that. I assume that was part of our ongoing operating expenses. So this would include stuff of current lawsuits that we're still working on.
Correct. It would include that, your insurance.
So they're not just claims. Not just our judgments. Stuff we've already legally have to pay and stuff
right.
We're working on. Okay. Your bed tax, that looks like the number that we saw in that discussion.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And your indication so far is that we're going to be above that, the number coming in.
Right, because we're budgeting at $4.2 million, and we're using the 1999 level. One thing I would like to mention is that our property tax limit here is $18,977,326. But if you remove the amount from the claims and judgment amount, you have a $17,049,392. And if you go to your page 67 of your budget, you'll see that we budgeted $17,049,410. So we're $18 shy of what we had budgeted.
Cutting pretty close.
That's about as accurate as you can get. We'll pat you on the back later. Okay. Ms. Sprinkle.
I'm going to ask a dumb question. So I'm looking at allowable additions being, again, claims and judgments, meaning we are collecting 1.9 mil?
That's how much you spent in 2022 for claims and judgments, and that also includes your insurance. Your insurance is almost a million.
I'm confused.
Because you have your workers' comp. Under claims and judgments, you have your insurance, your worker comp insurance, your police professional insurance, automobile insurance. You have your claims, general liability claims, which would be your any types of lawsuits. You have your automobile liability claims, workers' comp claims. You still have a claim that existed when we were self-insured.
Okay.
And we do reduce that number by any reimbursements we get from insurance companies or any lawsuits where we may have been awarded funds. That goes against that amount to reduce that number.
Okay. Thank you. I see now.
Mr. Ringstead.
Just in process here. Okay. So now... this is what you're estimating for income.
Yes, correct.
Okay. So as we go forward, then we have to set a mill rate sometime in the near future.
That's what
we're spending now or for what?
This mill rate would be effective July 1, and you will receive the funds from this levy
in
November of this year.
Okay. So
the borough sets the mill rate here in June.
So,
and we're part of that.
Do we then, as we go through this, and say, okay, here's how much our original budget, we've made one, and we're working on our second adjustment to that budget, and somewhere in that process of how much we're going to be spending, we have to look at what we need for a mill rate to pay for that.
Right. So when we do the budget in October and November, we're estimating how much we think we will get in property taxes, how much we think we'll get in these other areas, such as our sales taxes. And so on one hand, you're doing a budgeted amount when we're looking at your sales tax. But at this stage, now we're figuring we know how much the assessed value. So now we're not estimating, we're saying this will be the mill levy. The only estimated part we have is the sales tax part. And let's say that our sales tax, not to complicate things, but that is your only area where you're kind of estimating is under your budget taxation section.
But let me back up on it and say, okay, so this is money that's going to come into us in our budget year 2023.
Correct.
Okay. We're halfway through the year of spending that money already.
You're correct.
Okay, so... So we're not addressing our next year's budget. We're really addressing this year's budget or the surplus or deficit we have at the end of the year.
Correct. You are addressing this year's budget.
So we should be taking and saying, okay, we're halfway through a year. How much money are we going to spend this year? And then figure out what mill rate we need to pay for that. And next year's should be next year's.
You could do that.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Is this because the borough's on a fiscal calendar and we're on a year-to-year calendar?
Yes.
Correct. These are a difference of year. They're, per state law, we have until we have to finalize the levy by June 15. Okay. We have to propose that levy. So that's why it will be on your next council meeting. Because we need to notify the borough what that levy will be.
But if we were a fiscal calendar operation, we wouldn't have this jog.
I still think you would have this discussion.
You would, okay.
Because if you had a fiscal year of July to June 30, you would have a better feel, but you would still have to have that budget in place before July 1. And you still would be making this estimate.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
That horse is dead.
We're going to move on to item number 3, which is resolution 5068, a resolution urging the State of Alaska Department of Revenue to provide a tax payment hub in the interior for marijuana cultivators, and the is being introduced by Councilmember Sprinkle. Ms. Sprinkle, you want to bring us through this?
Sure. I was approached by Sam Hatchie about the convoluted efforts it takes to pay the mandated marijuana tax, cannabis tax, to the state. And it seems that there's only a take it to Juneau or take it to Anchorage option. And as many growers and retailers as we have in the interior, it causes real issue. And I feel like as a business that is paying a lot of revenue to the state, we should make this easier. I spoke to both the mayor and city clerk about making our area a hub for collection. And it was discussed that maybe this is a first step in getting the state to recognize something outside of Anchorage or Juneau. And where that becomes paid, I don't know. But I just wanted to get this kind of underway as a conversation to the state and make everybody's businesses healthy and easy, and you know, why contort a regular business into paying taxes? So that's where I am with this.
In an assist to this, I'm still a member of the Marijuana Control Task Force that the governor put together in December, and we've been extended for another year. And this is one of the items that's on our list. So this will help if this resolution passes. And it is quite needed. It is quite needed. So I appreciate your delving into this, Ms. Sprinkle. Thank you. Any other questions on this?
Mayor?
Yes, Mark, Mr. Marnie.
Mayor, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, sir.
Mr. Marnie, I think we're having a delay in our audio, so the mayor is calling upon you now. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. It is cutting in and out. I'm kind of worried about the added burden onto the clerk's office with this.
Well, you look at this, and it... There's two ways to go about this.
I didn't hear a word. I'm sorry.
There's two ways to go about this. The city clerk can take the monies for the state, but I think it would be best, what we're working on the state level, is have the state open up their own unit up here. And this resolution helps in that endeavor.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on this? Ms.
Can we hear from the clerk's office as to their perception?
So when Ms. Sprinkle and I spoke about this, she came to see me. And this resolution in no way obligates the city of Fairbanks. It in no way enters into any kind of contract with the state. This is just asking the Department of Revenue with the state to help basically our local cultivators, because there's about 40 in the mid-40s, that's the number of cultivators in this area. And Anchorage, and the municipality of Anchorage has less cultivators than that. Although Wasilla has about 40-something. So this wouldn't impact my office. This resolution would not have any impact on my office. Now, if we're talking about tasking my office with collecting that cash, then that's a separate conversation. And Ms. Tidwell has her hand up.
You want to call on her, please?
Yeah, your microphone is working, Mayor. The problem is we're having this happen again. the Zoom app is delaying about 3 seconds of when we first start talking, no matter if it's me or you or any council member. So,
okay. Ms. Sidwell, you have your hand up.
I wanted to thank Sue for bringing this up. I too am really interested in seeing this happen. So I'd like to be added as a co-sponsor, if that's okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Crystal.
Any other discussion on this before we move on? Seeing none, we'll go to item number 4, resolution 5069, awarding a contract to Johnson River Enterprises LLC for the senior center resolution renovation phase 3 dining room expansion. This is introduced by me. Johnson River Enterprises for the last 2 years has been has obligated themselves to work with the senior center. And I don't think they're getting any margin of a profit at all. In fact, I would say they're doing a lot of pro bono work. Yeah, that's a polite word for it, but pro bono. And so anyway, they were the winning low bidder. And this is what we do. It's a resolution, and it's overseen by the Senior Center. And here you go. Any questions? Mr. Ringstead? I have no idea. I would think starting immediately, to tell you the truth. They've been continually working out there now for over a year and a half. So, Ms. Sprinkle?
This is a building we own, correct?
Yes, it is.
And for that reason, we don't pay.
I think they lease it from us for $1 per year.
I was going to say, there's no real monetary thing. Okay, very good.
And we talked about selling it to them for $1. But then we came back and looked at it and said, you know, it's a very good layering system with the City of Fairbanks and the Senior Center and how we can apply for items for them.
Correct.
So we decided, no, let's just keep it as it is, and we really let Darlene operate this. She does a great job. She has a great board. They have great staff. So, this was them. This is them doing this. This was not the City of Fairbanks. This is them going out to bid and doing it all very well. So, any other discussion on this before we move on?
I just think that it makes a really, really positive comment to all the discussion about our population growing older and all that sort of thing, that for us to be so closely involved with that center, I don't think we should ever widen that gap.
You know, I get a monthly newsletter from them, and it's about 6-7 pages long, and it is extensive, very descriptive. Mm-hmm. It shows the meals that they make, that they deliver on a daily basis, and it's a frontline service for them to make sure that the seniors are healthy, needing any assistance. It puts a volunteer at their door every weekday. Mm-hmm. Yes, Ms. Sprinkle.
Is this where Meals on Wheels originates?
Yes.
I'm all in. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How can you not be?
No.
And can I add one more thing? Anybody who's ever gone over to their facility, it is always bustling in some fashion or another. And the volunteers are on task and understanding the realm. It's a very well organized operation.
Okay. Next on our list is item number 5, ordinance number 6245, an ordinance amending the Fairbanks City 2023 operating budget and capital budgets for the second time. And we will let Margarita go through this with you.
Okay. If you'll turn with me to page 2 of the ordinance, and please note that the only change, this is a substitute. You have the original before you, I believe, is your first one. If you turn to, I think you have 2 copies as proposed substitute. And if you will turn to the proposed substitute. I think you have 2 copies. One is the original that you reviewed for first reading at the last council meeting, and then there's a proposed substitute.
It's in your package. It's located right behind.
It is behind the original. Okay. If you'll turn with me to page 2 on the proposed substitute as amended version, please note that we're not making any changes to the revenue appropriation. We're still looking at $42.5 million. And if you'll look with me down under the expenditure appropriation, you'll see fire department is highlighted. We are requesting an increase of $20,000. For salary and benefits to train a temporary firefighter who will be replacing an employee that's resigning in August. And that will increase our total expenditure appropriation increase of $615,900 for a total expenditure appropriation of $44.4 million. If you go down with me to the 2023 estimated unassigned balance, you'll see that we will be at 15.579 is our estimated unassigned balance, which is above the 10 million minimum that we should have. And that is the only proposed change that we have to the budget as presented.
Chief Rager, could you please come up and explain to everyone this, what this does to us fiscally, paying for it now versus paying overtime later?
Yeah, so we have a person that's going to go to the Pacific Northwest. Their academy starts at the end of August. Our academy is starting in July. So just efficiency-wise, we would be able to have them trained up, ready to go. It's about a two-month academy, so just as that person is leaving to the Washington area, our person will be ready to go. And we'll have no additional overtime for being down that staffing. If we don't do it, the person will leave in August. We'll organize probably another academy around, well, October if the weather's not too bad. And then we'll take 2 months. We'll have 3 to 4 months of not having one of those positions filled.
And we'll be doing it anyway.
Yes.
Ms. Sprinkle.
So this is, again, just to clarify, this is for training of the firefighter that will soon then fill in the spot.
Correct. It takes us 2 months before we can count them towards manning and put them on the line for suppression. So we'll get that training out of the way. So basically the day the other person leaves, they can go right to filling their position on the line.
Mr. Cleaver.
Thank you, Mayor. When do we hear about the SAFER grant?
I'd expect before July. You know, the feds are on that fiscal year, so I would say anytime soon. But Okay. Everything's been sort of, federally, everything's sort of been off a month this year in the whole shutdown thing.
So question for you, Margarita. If this position is filled with a temporary, if this council were to accept the SAFER grant, would that temporary person be looked at by the government as a permanent employee?
No, we have to provide them a roster of our full-time equivalent staff member, permanent. So we would only provide a roster of our permanent full-time staffing, so it would not count.
So they wouldn't ding us for this?
No, they would not.
Okay. While we're in the fire department, can I ask some other questions?
What's that?
Can I ask some other questions while we're here? Okay.
Mr. Clearworth, you are unencumbered, sir.
The last one, Margarita, the 9,600, you're just switching that from the budget to capital? Is that what you're doing?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
In the fire department the last item, the 9,600 for ultrasound.
Yes, you are correct. It is being returned to the general fund, and then if you'll go to the capital on page 8, the cost of the equipment change from $9,600 to $15,000. So that moved it from the general fund to the capital fund. Okay. And you'll see the last item increase for ultrasound equipment at $15,000, and that's on page 8.
I have to chuckle because I can't believe you're doing that.
Hmm?
usually fight us when we try to do things like that.
Well, once it hits that value of 10,000, it's a capital equipment. And I'm not
going
to
argue.
Mr. Clayworth, she's coming to the light. She's coming to the light.
No. If it went down from 15,000.
Now she's under. Waving the finger at us, so we better listen.
So, Chief, the last one I have is for you. It's this 8,500 additional captain position in lieu of a deputy fire marshal. What's going on there, I guess?
So we couldn't fill the deputy fire marshal's position, and then our captain, Brian, has moved over from line suppression to fill that position. And it's just he remains a captain within the department.
Okay. We did not fund a deputy fire marshal. So I guess I don't. I don't understand what's going on here.
In the budget, you have a deputy fire marshal, but not at the salary of a captain. So what this does is it increases the amount so that you could pay more for that position. That's basically what you're doing. You're paying more for the position because you have a captain in that position. And your deputy fire marshal does not make, when we budgeted, she was not at that level. At that rate, because the captain makes more than a deputy fire marshal.
Yeah, but we did not fill the deputy fire marshal position. We didn't budget for that position.
Yes, you did. You did. If you'll turn with me, if you have your budget book.
I don't have my budget book this morning.
Neither do I.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I can share it. I can share it.
On page 133. You have a fire marshal. You have a deputy fire marshal. It's about midway through. You have one position. And I know what you're referring to, the fire marshal position. We did not fund the fire marshal,
but we
fund the deputy fire marshal.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was confusing the two.
Right.
Thank you.
Any other items on number five on our agenda? Mr. Ringstead.
Two, where you've got your revenue and your expenditures.
What was that again, Mr. Ringstead?
Page two.
Okay.
The bottom line is $8.9 million. What's that supposed to be about?
I'm sorry, I'm not following you, Mr. Ringstead. What page are you on?
Page two.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Ringstead, what that shows is
that's the 20%.
Yeah, that's one of our barriers, but we have a minimum of 10 million. So that's just showing what our barrier of minimum would be.
What the minimum 20% would be.
Right, yeah. Correct.
Okay.
But it says they're not less than 10 million. Okay. So we are basically 60% over our minimum in fund balance. So you're doing very well. Mr. Clayworth, I'm sorry, I didn't see your hand up.
No. Question, Margarita. I know you're waiting for the final audit on numbers. Traditionally, about this time of year, we make a movement of some general funds to capital. And I know you've been waiting to get some final numbers on that. Are you at a point now where we could make a movement?
We made a $3 million transfer at the beginning of the year, and that was based on my estimate of where we would be at the end of this year. The audit is complete, and the amount that we may need to do just a small adjustment on the unassigned fund balance that you're reviewing. And in fact, I have done the adjustment on that. So you're looking at the actual audited unassigned fund balance of 17.5. But your first budget amendment, we had a $3 million transfer from the general fund into the capital fund.
Do you feel safe about moving more. I mean, we're at 15.5. That's a huge cushion.
Mr. Cleworth, we are having that discussion, actually.
Okay.
And what we want to do is wrap that in with the Finance Committee in looking at long-term projections for capital budget, and also have a discussion about placing some of this extra revenue into our permanent fund. So we are starting to have that discussion. You're absolutely right. This is when we start doing it, and we're going to be looking at that. And I would say in July, we'll be making those, you know, we'll be having a good work session on that.
Okay.
If not, yeah, I'd say July.
Thank you, Mayor.
Yep. Any other discussions on this? Seeing none, I'd like to thank Margarita and Chief Rager for presentation here, and going on to item number 6, an ordinance amending the Fairbanks General Code Section 2-233 to change the quorum requirement for the Fairbanks Diversity Council, introduced by the mayor, myself. And what we want to do is make the quorum from the seats that are appointed or filled, make that the quorum. We're always having on this committee, if you want to call it that, we've been having a lot of changeover recently. So getting a quorum with the amount of seats, when you put in the vacancy factor and the quorum, and talking with the chair and of the Diversity Council and with Danny, we thought that we could have meetings if the quorum was based, and with Ms. Rogers too, if the quorum was based on the amount of seated members versus the amount of seats. So that's what this does. It changes to the amount of seated members versus the seats. Any discussion on it? Seeing none?
Oh,
I'm sorry, Ms. Rogers.
Also, I think that passing this ordinance is going to validate and respect those persons who diligently come to the meetings and then have to be sent home because one person isn't there.
Yeah, you know, it. You know, I must say, in viewing the Diversity Council, you have some very fine, committed members. But what will happen is we all will sit in this room and we're just waiting for that final person to get here so we can have a meeting. And then it doesn't happen. Yeah, because you might have two or three vacant seats, and I've already appointed two new members in the last 30 days to hopefully fill the ranks. So, Ms. Sprinkle.
Is 11? Well, you're changing it to 6, I suppose. I just wondered if it was a threshold that was, maybe it's just too many people.
Okay, anything else before we move on?
Excuse me, can I respond to that comment? And this goes back to attending thousands of meetings that have had similar problems. And when we start talking about the idea that there's too many people, it's usually a phrase that is overused and really doesn't accomplish. And whenever I hear that comment, I have to speak against it. We could have 50 people on a committee as long as we appoint persons who are genuinely interested in being there. And when we just have meetings where we start bringing them back down to where there's only 3 or 4 people, we don't have community represented anymore. And we might as well just give up the whole routine. Just go ahead and make our decisions in-house and be done with it. So, I'm sorry, but that's my caustic view of all of what I see over and over and over with committees. And I think that this is really best and most reactive way.
Thank you very much. And we're going to move on to item number 7, ordinance number 6249, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 2-260 sub C, B, and 2 by increasing the exposure limit on BBB rated securities in the city permanent fund investment policy. Mr. Ringstead, this is from you. You want to start bringing us through it?
Our investor group suggested that we do this. It doesn't impact a large amount of money for us. As I recall, Margarita, you might correct me, but the amount of money that is is going and can go into this category is pretty small, but they think it gives them better flexibility in their investment strategy for us. So they'd ask that we do that.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Who's they?
What's the name of our contractor?
It's All Investment Managers is APCM, Alaska Permanent Management Capital.
They came and in and did a presentation a couple of months back with their annual report thing, that group.
Wow, you're good.
Okay, we're going to move on because Mr. Ringstedt is good.
He's good.
We're going to go to item number 8, Ordinance 6250, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, Chapter 74, Article 5, Room Rental Tax, to change the allocation of the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, FEDC. Ms. Pritchard, is Ms. Sprinkle available to participate in this conversation?
Given earlier comments, I would suggest that Councilmember Sprinkle is conflicted out, and it's for the chair to rule, and if there are any questions of the chair's rule, that's appropriate.
There's a chair, I rule that Ms. Sprinkle is conflicted out. Okay. Any discussion points on that? Seeing none, we will move on. Mr. Ringstedt, this is your ordinance.
Yeah, this is kind of the last piece, I hope, the last piece of this bed tax section. But we had specifically pulled this out so that Ms. Sprinkle could participate in the rest of it. So in doing this, for this current year, I think we increased the appropriation to $125,000 without changing the code. And as we went through the numbers and the rest of it, I think we were discussing having 150 to Bedco on this one. So this is just to clean up that last piece.
Mr. Martin, do you have any comments?
No, I would ask the sponsor of this ordinance if I could also co-sponsor this, please.
He has a thumbs up. You're on. Thank any you, other John. Discussions on this? Seeing none, thank you. We will move on to item number 9, Ordinance 6251, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, Chapter 50, Personnel, Section 50-209, Training Reimbursements, Section 50-281, Personal Leave, and Section 50-285, Health Insurance Coverage. And something like this is, of course, coming from Mr. Cleworth. Mr. Clearworth, would you please bring us through this update of what we're trying to do?
Thank you, Mayor. Actually, the credit really needs to go to Margarita on this one, but it is something that we've been aware of as the years go by in our code under the labor section. It says we're looking for consistency between bargaining units as well as between union and non-union employees. And what's happened over time is that we have gotten a little out of sync between the two with our exempt staff, and this is an attempt to bring us back into sync with them.
Okay.
I don't know, Margarita, you want to add something to that?
What really brought it to the forefront is the very first adjustment that you have on the training reimbursement. We had one of the staff attended a training and they were paid $40, and so our staff questioned it because other unions are paid $60. But because it was silent in one of the bargaining agreements, we had to pay what was set in the code. So that just brought to the forefront that I really needed to have someone to look through the personnel section. And this is what started the discussion that I had with Mr. Cleworth regarding this section of the code. And I just gave him the whole personnel section, and he reviewed it. And this was the information that was brought forth.
Any other questions in regards to this? Ms. Sprinkle.
This looks like a great deal of change. Can we have a conversation?
Could you repeat that answer, Mr. Clayworth?
On the personnel section, the information provided in this section was confusing to implement because of the, it appeared to have been written to address a current change that they were making back. And I want to say, I'm not sure what year it was. So it was referring to, if you still have this, and it was referring to grandfathering clauses, and it's just removing it, and Mr. Cleanworth removed it to fit the current personal leave that other unions receive.
Mr. Cleanworth.
Yeah, just to add to that, we spent quite a bit of time talking about this, and it used to be, you can see under E down there, which has been struck out, the maximum was 500 hours that an employee could carry forward. But in the process of negotiating some of these contracts, it's been bumped up to 600. And this makes it equal between them. You know, I'm not sure how years ago, and I was off council, how the 500 went to 600, but it did. And, you know, maybe in the future as we negotiate contracts, we should get it back down to the 500. That's a lot of hours to carry forward.
Yeah.
And, but if we do something like that, that's, you know, pretty much boilerplate parts of these contracts. We need to be consistent from contract to contract. And right now we're inconsistent with the exempt staff. And just in fairness to them, I think we need to mirror what we have done for the other employees. And then in the future, I think when we negotiate contracts, we need to take a look at that number again and try and get it back down to a reasonable amount.
Okay. Any other comments? Mr. Ringstad.
So I'm looking at this last part here about health care insurance. Employees covered by this chapter will allocate health care practices. Does that mean they pay it?
Mr. Clearworth, for the answer.
Normally, I'll just use IBEW, when you give them a raise, it's a package. And so let's say it's 3%. It'd be 3% in salaries and wages, 3% for pension, 3% medical. And you figure out what that lump sum is. But the exempt staff has had the opportunity to look at that and prorate it differently. So they could take that 6% and say, we want to put it all in the salaries and wages, but we don't want to put any money towards the health or the pension part. And the city's allowed them to do that and allowed the union to do that, IBEW. In the last labor negotiations, I remember the union itself with IBEW is complaining that the employees weren't putting any money into the health, they were putting it all in the salaries and wages, because looking in the future, it was more lucrative for them to do that. But the black eye the city kind of got was that since they're putting no money into that, then their portion of the health coverage keeps growing. And so, you know, they can come back, union can come back and say, well, you know, look, the employers are paying so much of this health care, and they've got this big bill, and the city's not contributing that much. Well, the irony is that the employees themselves had voted not to put money into it, and they would pay more on a monthly basis into health care because they didn't put any of the pay raise into it. It gets a little convoluted. And so all this says is that a portion of this has to be allocated to health care.
A portion of the raises would be allocated.
Yeah. And with IBEW, and I could be wrong on this, Margarita, because, again, I wasn't here when that contract was negotiated in the final version, but the union had requested that the employees start putting money into that as well, and I think that they are. In the last round, weren't they putting some more money into it?
Yes. In the last contract negotiations, the IBEW puts 60 cents from the increases
into health care. 60 cents per hour.
And we hadn't been doing that prior.
So. Ms. Sprinkle?
So how does then the balance or, you know, the other 40 cents, who figures that out? The employee? The IBEW? Is that a magic number? How does that get figured? It just says portion of. I mean, that could be anything, right? And who decides that?
What this does is if the council, and you usually do this during the budgeting cycle, the mayor will make a proposal for non-exempt staff, what percentage. And most of the time it is the CPI. So if the mayor says 3%, I propose for increases for non-exempt staff, then 3% of that portion of the health care will remain in health care, and then the balance will go to more than likely wages.
Okay.
Because the way the package rate works is that when the council gives them a CPI increase, that 3% is a total of the wage, the base wage, the pension, and the health care. So all of that together makes a package. And then the 3% is against that total package. So for the non-bargain group, the amount that would be equivalent to 3% of their health care will remain in the health care, and the balance will go to wages or pensions, depending on.
Okay, so there is a formula.
Right, there
okay,
is
very
a
good.
Formula.
Thank you.
Mr. Ringstead.
Comes with that proposal in the budget process.
Correct, for non-exempt.
Is that a decision, but is that mayor's decision or is that the council's decision?
It's the council's decision because he's proposing a percentage.
Make a proposal, then we deal council, with the budget.
Council has final review and say on all appropriations and expenditures and income, period. Mr. Cleaworth.
I'd be curious. I don't know if the city clerk and city attorney have had a chance to look at that. There's not many people that this affects at the city, but if you have any comments at this time or any ideas that maybe we missed, I don't know. But
well, I'll have them review that. Appreciate it. And I appreciate you delving into this because this did need an upgrade. So anyway.
Mayor,
yes, Mr. Chair.
Just briefly.
Go ahead.
Just briefly, and Councilmember Cleaworth, I was going to chat with you a little bit afterward. There's a section two, where it talks about the per diem rates, and it simplifies and updates the per diem rate from $40 to the same as the state of Alaska rates. The state of Alaska actually has two, or at least two different rates. So I might work with you to just add some specificity there so there's no confusion forward.
Well, Mr. Murney, any thoughts?
Yeah, I wanted to thank Mr. Cleaworth for reviewing this and also add this ought to be looked at every 3 years like we do the other contracts. Thank you.
Any other comments? Seeing none, we'll go on to item number 10. Finance Committee reports, of which we have two members, Ms. Sprinkle and Mr. Ringstead, and we have the chair of the Finance Committee, Ms. Bell. So, Ms. Bell, any thoughts on the Finance Committee?
I just wanted to let you know that the Finance Committee will meet on Thursday, June 15th, and it's usually the Thursday after your first council meeting of the month from 7 to 8:30 a.m. They'll be in the Felix Pedro Room. They'll be reviewing the financial statements as of May 31st. They will be addressing two recommendations for council, one on the tobacco sales tax, the other is on the fire department battalion chief position. They are beginning to take a look at the capital fund, doing some analysis, trying to get a plan for moving forward, the 10-year plan in place for moving forward, and they'll address that if time permits as well. So you're more than welcome to join us on Thursday, June 15th from 7 to 8:30 a.m. in the Felix Pedro Room.
Ms. Sprinkle, you will have coffee that morning. Any other comments on the Finance Committee? Seeing none, we'll go to item number 11, Mayor and City Council member comments. We have in the room here Christy. Could you please come up here and give a report under Mayor's comments on the dispatch center and what you're doing and how things are going? Again, this is under Mayor's comments.
Okay. First, let me apologize for my clothes since I left it last night and came back early this morning. So we don't have a whole lot of changes in there. We are extremely low on our dispatchers. We are just trying to make it through every single day and every hour. We have 5 fully trained people and trying to cover the shifts, and 2 that are here, 3 that are remote that are coming up and helping, and then myself. Admin assistant is jumping in and helping him, basically covering 2.5 to 3 jobs because he has to do his admin job. He also is helping train and dispatch, even though he didn't want to report there. And we're just trying to make it through.
In your training, we're looking at bringing in the AI system of training, which will give much better efficient call training, dispatching, that they don't have to sit in the room and do. Could you go bring us through that?
So there's a couple things that we're bringing in for that one. There is an AI simulator. So as we go through these calls that we don't actually take very often, like your first CPR call, and we always have to act it out with the person. Well, we're not very good actors, and we're sitting side by side. This is actually, you can build it for multiple purposes, for training people, and you can have like a 4-year-old child make it sound like a 4-year-old child on the phone. You can program it and have them take the call, listen to it, run through the call, and it's not a real call. So when your first CPR call, you don't really always want it to be your first person because it's high stress. Well, that's what it is for us. We're standing there telling them where to click and what to do as you're counting and doing CPR. So this is a lot of practicing that we can do on the other side of it. And also those, when we have our quality assurance, we get all of our calls queued, we get feedback. Well, we can find our common errors. There's another part to it that we can run all these reports, see what the most common calls are, where are we messing up the most, what instructions are we missing. And so we can run these reports and give feedback and then build it in this other system to learn how to do it better and be able to send that same call, exact same call, to every single department or every person in the department. And so we're all graded on it, seeing where we need to go and how we do it.
Mr. Ringstead.
We've been struggling with this for way too long, and we appreciate that. What can we as the council do to help you continue to move this forward?
We are looking at some options to see what would work best, not just for now, not the Band-Aid, but how do we get out of this and stay out of it in the future. We are always, even with our last CBA, we got a huge pay raise. And so we just recently asked everybody else. We are about 10%, I think, behind everybody else again. The closest person that matches us, not in pay-wise, but job description. I mean, the troopers right now, they make a lot more of this. They do police. They don't even answer the phones first. So we get the phone calls, we transfer them to them if they're police-related. They only do one discipline and just basically send troopers. They are very busy. It is a different job because they cover half of the state. It's just a little less stress than having to do CPR at the same time and everything like that. So I'm working with Mike, Margarita, that's why I'm over here, so I can talk to her. I was trying to talk to her all day yesterday, and I ran out of time. But try to figure out how we can get out of this. And also, we have to keep some of us that are remote, those dispatchers, because they have that knowledge. Almost everybody, if they're not a remote dispatcher, has 2 years or less. We have one person that has 8 years, or she's working on her 8-year, but everybody else is 2 years or less. And so even then, it's like we had the building, they smelled something in the building, and they're like, oh, we're going to have the fire department check. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you have to check here, here, here. You have to get somebody to come in into evidence because that's also locked. But it's even just our own building. They don't know it. I'm trying to do that.
Ms. Ringstead, then Ms. Sprinkle.
So you said you've got five. Remind me what full staff would be.
17.
17. So
I think.
How many do you have in the training queue that are coming at this point?
We have.
How many fingers and toes
six,
do you have?
Five or six in there. I have to say names. We have five or six
that are in the training, yeah. Which would get you up to 10. But you're still short several.
Yes. So even because you have to use those five people to be able to train at the same time. That's why Jake's helping us. He only wanted to do police. He does not like answering 911 phones. He did that, and that's why he left. And so we don't make him do that unless it is really bad. But like yesterday, I worked 5 a.m. to 11. No, I left at 10:30 p.m. From 5 a.m. to 10:30.
Right,
so, from 5 a.m. to 3 p.m., I was the only person answering 911s, just getting through them as fast as I can, unless there were so many that it was taking a little bit longer than Jake would grab one or something. But, yeah, it's just me going 1-1-1. Well, that's exhausting.
Ms. Sprinkle?
It is a national thing for all public safety that everybody dropped out because not only do you have to work that, but my trainees sit here and watch us work, and they're like, yeah, I'm out. I'm not doing this too. They feel bad, and I had one girl stay. She's a trainee. She works police, so she's allowed to work that only. She can't answer the phones. So she feels bad when it was just me. We worked all weekend. I worked 16-hour shifts all weekend, but she felt bad because she can't answer the phone. I'm like, don't feel bad. I got it. But she's like, I'm so sorry. I can't help you. I'm so sorry. I'm like, it's okay. I got it. You're doing that over there. You're helping me.
Ms. Sprinkle?
We do CTC has EMT classes and whatnot. Does this kind of a career ever want to be visited by CTC?
It could be. They did it a couple years ago. They asked about it, but it would be our department probably doing that. Not everybody has police. Not everybody does fire and EMS. I know the EMS board is looking at making it a mandatory that you have some kind of training in EMS. So, like, we give CPR instructions. We are required to have that. But troopers do EMS, too, but they don't do any CPR instructions, anything. Actually, they pass it over to us, and we help with that.
So do we ever charge the state for the time that takes us to take care of their phone calls?
I do not. That was brought up by a contract employee to do that. But how I would not feel right doing that because what's going to happen when the state can't pay and then I just basically killed somebody because they can't pay?
Well, I don't think the
call. That's how we feel because we can't help them. And we took the call, so we would take the call first, give it to them, knowing somebody needed CPR, and we know we're not going to get it back.
Christy, just so the city council realizes we're not going to totally burn you out, where are you going on your vacation and for how long?
I'm going to Africa on Sunday for 2 weeks. Africa, South Africa, in, I don't remember this time, somewhere in South Africa. My husband has a plan. I'm having a panic attack leaving.
Christy, thank you very much for being here. Yes, Ms. Rogers.
A while back, when you were asking some questions about what could we do, one of the things we did, we had a fair amount of discussion regarding conditions. We, talk about dollars and so on and so forth, but dollars aren't solving our problem. But we talked a lot about conditions and child care and assisting with the whole. Are there other conditions that you could see might be helpful to this staffing situation?
I don't know. We kind of balance them all out, but, even so the child care is coming forward and stuff like that, but we still end up with sick children in dispatch. I mean, Jake's really awesome at making a fort, but if you can't take your kid to daycare and you can't not stay home because there's nobody to work, then there's a child in dispatch or sick or across the hall or whatever, or somebody else is switching out with the sick child trying to, oh, can you take my child because you're going home? And then we switch out children like that. But we just need to figure out how to wait to get people to come and want to come in and stay. And so that's the big part. I mean, all of us love our job. We want to stay. Even the people that usually leave, they like the job and everything. It's just they're exhausted. And some of them recently, that's all they've done is 3 years of COVID and overtime. I ran my numbers yesterday, and I think some of them have already worked about 700 hours of overtime this year.
Chrissy, for a police officer to be fully vested, it's 20 years. What is the time frame for a dispatcher to be fully vested? 30 years.
30 years.
I want you all to think about that. Mm-hmm. And maybe, I don't know what we can do, but it's something we should look at. Yeah. Ms. Rogers.
I just heard you say, and I've heard you say it many times before, that you all love your jobs. And I think that's something that we can do here at the city is to illuminate that aspect of things. It's really sad when you hear general conversation in the community and you see things that are written up news-wise, not just here, but Anchorage throughout. I mean, it's how things are portrayed in a way that doesn't give that sense of that there's that love for those jobs. And if we're talking about recruiting people, I would think that's one of the most powerful images that we can provide for people is that people who are working in your positions love their work. I think that the video that was created for the police and a variety of different things like that, I mean, I don't know how many other people are listening to it, but I hear all sorts of anti-things about our realm here. From our community. I'm appalled at what our community thinks about our circumstances and our projects and our people and whatnot. I can't believe that, you know, people have their head in the sand that deeply, but it is, and we need to acknowledge that, and we need to express those kinds of images about the work that you do in a regular fashion so that everyone is talking about how much you love your job so that more people feel compelled to apply for it.
Mr. Clearworth, then Ms. Sprinkle.
Mayor, some time ago I brought up the child care part, and I think Mike Sanders has been working on something. Is that still ongoing?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Okay, so we saw the police video for potential hiring. Did I see one for emergency services?
Yeah. Dispatch got it first. We
okay,
were
so
lower staff, so ours went out first, and we still have that.
Is that garnering any attention? Is it maybe not being presented broadly enough?
I think it's just on our city website and our Facebook page, and that's it. But I mean, for us to try to promote it, us as dispatchers, we're busy answering the phone.
I wonder, could Teal help that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. We can work on that.
Yeah. To help disperse that information would be very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, for us to balance and everything, it's very difficult.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, I'm going to ask Christy, is the lateral hire bonus effective any longer?
Yes, we actually, so we've learned a couple things. So even if I do my research on what a lateral is, because, you know, a police officer, you have to be certified. Firefighters, you do. Dispatchers, you don't in the state of Alaska. There are other states that you do actually have to go to academy. You have to do certain standards and tests. In the state of Alaska, you don't have to do that. So even if you do your research when you get the background and talk to the person and kind of research their center, doesn't mean that you actually know what they are. We, in the city of Fairbanks, even when Stephanie Johnson left and she took her job, they were amazed at how much she knows, how much IT she knows, how much everything you know, because we have to learn it because there's no other place. Like Stephanie has a radio person. Well, that's me. She has a computer person. That's me. So I had to learn all these things, and I still reach out to Stephanie at times. But like our WestNet fire system yesterday, I'm answering 911s, talking to the fire department, problem solving their stuff on their wall, testing things. We don't have an IT that does the internal program stuff. They do network stuff, but they can't learn the inside stuff that we do as the dispatcher and how we function. Otherwise, you would have to learn our job. So it works on that part, but you realize that I have a girl in there right now, Phoenix PD. She does really awesome at dispatching, and she's going to get the lateral too. They just signed the papers. But I realize I have to kind of watch them a little bit to see if it truly is a lateral, or did you work at another agency and it doesn't qualify to our dispatchers and how much we have to do.
Well, I'm just wondering if we could take that money and spend it in a better fashion.
I think that gets people to come to us instead of troopers first, because troopers don't give a lateral bonus to their dispatchers, but they do pay more. And so that will get them to apply for us first because it looks a little bit better in the beginning.
Any other questions here for Christy? Miss Christy, when you walk in, I knew what I was going to do. Thank you for being here. And thank you for the commitment to the city of Fairbanks and what you do. Really appreciate it. Also under my mayoral comments, we have about a list of 70 properties, I would say, that we're looking at that are in some sort of derelict condition. We have Ms. Sprinkle's list that I've brought down to the Fairbanks North Star Borough. We're getting all the information on that. And I got Public Works list. So I'd say in mid-June, we're in a work session, we'll thoroughly go through that and show you the status of where we're at, what we're doing with that. Also, my job is also a commitment to the city council to make sure you know as much information about what the city is doing in each department. That way you can make very, very good decisions. So when I saw Christy in here, the finance committee, things like that, we can project 10 years out, we can project 10 days out what we're doing and how we're operating. That way you have a basis of knowledge to make the best decisions possible. Other council member comments? We'll start with Ms. Tidwell. Ms. Tidwell, any comments?
No, I'm okay. I think, oh, wait, I did want to ask, it cut out when you guys were talking about the next, the finance committee that's in the Felix Pedro room. When is that and what time?
That is next Tuesday morning at 7 a.m.
It's June the 15th.
June 15th.
Thursday, June the 15th.
Oh, June, Thursday. Oh,
at 7
a.m. It will
Thank
be
you.
There. It will, you know, Got it'll it. Also be ready Tuesday for you.
Thanks. That's it.
Mr. Marnie, any comments, sir?
No, thank you very much, and I'll see you guys Monday night. Thank you.
Mr. Ringstead, any comments? Mr. Clayworth, any comments?
Just an explanation. At the next council meeting, we're having a work session before that, I believe, and that was on Public Police Department. Was that correct?
Yes.
One of the concerns I have with this discussion is there are certain things that the council can do that are outside the contract, bonuses being one of them that we've done consistently over the years and things like that. But when we get into looking at changing the contract itself, that's where I start having concerns, because then I think that it falls under the labor provisions of our code, and I think we need to follow that in the proper.
Are you looking at an executive session rather than?
If we're talking about things other than bonuses, actually changing that contract, yeah, to me it should be done in executive session. We should follow the procedures that we have in our code.
Let me talk with the city attorney, and then I'll sit down with you and we'll go through that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Ms. Rogers. Ms. Sprinkle.
Again, I'm going to say thank you, Mayor, for your help on the distressed properties. I'm excited to see some cleanup of our beautiful city, and I'm very excited to see that. I understand there's a work session scheduled for July 4th of the City Council.
Where is it?
Well, it's in your backyard with a barbecue.
It's house,
out at Chena
yeah.
Lakes.
I wonder if we want to reschedule.
I think we will be doing that immediately, and thank you for bringing that up, Ms. Sprinkle, and I will admonish the clerk.
Oh, no, let's not do that.
I know. She will admonish me back. Don't worry.
Your candy supply will not be replenished.
I like my body parts where they're at. She's already given me the silent treatment.
The irony is so beautiful. Okay. Thank you. Lonnie, okay. Lonnie, you're missing it.
Seeing as how I'm going to maybe survive. Seeing as I'm maybe surviving this work session, is there a motion to adjourn? So moved. Any debate or anyone against it? Seeing no one in opposed, we're adjourned.